You're listening to the Illustration Hour podcast, an interview podcast where I talk to illustrators, art directors, and agents about the craft and business of illustration. My name is Julia Dufossé, and I'm an editorial and commercial illustrator based in Chicago. And I'm chatting with creatives within the world of illustration to learn about their process, the challenges they faced along the way, and how to succeed as an illustrator today. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another week of the Illustration Hour. Very exciting week for me. I have started a new side project called Audio Loops, where I curate a playlist every month and make a unique illustration to go with it. I'm really excited about it, and you can find out more about those playlists in the show notes. You don't have to, just if you feel like it. I also finished a case study of the branding work that my wife and I did for the Illustration Hour podcast. If you like the podcast and you want to support it, you can go check it out on Behance. I've put the link to it in the show notes. And finally, as promised, I will be launching the newsletter this Friday. It's called Art Club, and I'll be trying to send it weekly or bi-weekly to you guys. And if you're interested in getting more Goodreads content I found or just inspiring stuff from the interwebs, then you can subscribe for that at illustrationhour.com/artclub. I know the website for the show isn't perfect. It's kind of a work in progress, and my wife and I are working hard to make it a more friendly and better design experience. So the website should be getting significant improvements very soon. But for now, let's get right into the show, and this one is a treat. Today, I welcome a very special creative to the show, the Dutch illustrator, designer, and graphic artist, Seb Agresti. Despite being quite new to the scene of editorial and commercial illustration, Seb only started illustrating full-time in 2017, Seb has already garnered a reputation for impeccably composed and conceptually intriguing illustrations, working for big publications like the New York Times and the New Yorker, and with brands like Warby Parker. Seb studied at the Willem de Kooning Academy in Rotterdam, and in his final year of study, he got an internship with the legendary comic artist and illustrator Joost Swarte. I find out exactly how Seb got his foot through the door and secured the internship. We also talk about how Seb stays inspired, how he surrounds himself with books and information to enrich his work, how he removes extraneous details and information from his work, and how he thinks about composition. Seb also shares some advice that he has for creatives starting out. You can find Seb on his website at sebagresti.com or on Instagram at seb_agresti. And the comprehensive show notes for the episode will be at illustrationhour.com/agresti. So without further ado, here is my talk with Seb Agresti. Seb, welcome to the show. I'm so glad to have you on.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, there's so many things I actually want to talk about with you. I'm really curious about how you work and what tools you use, your sources of inspiration. But I want this conversation to be about what you want to talk about. So with that in mind, I want to begin by having you describe what you do, your style, and your background.
Wow. So I work mostly as an editorial illustrator. I've been doing that for the past 2.5 years. And as of lately, I've been also doing some more design work, like graphic design. Just still exploring all the possibilities that are out there.
Yeah. Do you usually describe yourself as an illustrator, or do you say, you know, some people say, you know, creative? Or I'm really interested in that personally, because lately I've noticed like how people define themselves, especially illustrators. It's just very interesting.
Right. I like the term illustrator because it sounds like an humble profession. It's the most easy way to describe myself. And I do other stuff as well.
Do you think it encapsulates the graphic design as well? Because I've had that conversation with people that there's such a rift between, you know, graphic designers and illustrators sometimes. And part of me wonders, just for myself also, how you keep that door open, basically, when you call yourself an illustrator.
I found out that even if you call yourself a designer or an illustrator, mm-hmm. that term means something different to everybody. So
so what does it mean to you?
You know, like an illustrator, like the term is like you're literally illustrating for a client.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's, you know, like I think I call myself an illustrator because most of the work I do appears in print and it literally says illustration by. So
yeah.
It's an illustration. But, you know, I did my first book cover and record cover this year. And you're working with typography and the layout. And to me, that's more of a graphic design angle.
Wait, do you ever call yourself an artist?
No, I'm very, very uncomfortable by that term.
Why do you think that is?
It's also, I don't know. I feel like the guy who's very good at barbecuing is being called an artist, and then, you know, everybody's an artist, so I don't know what it means. And then it also sounds a bit pretentious, maybe.
Like, yeah. Maybe like a distinction between like fine art and illustration.
Yeah. Maybe I like the term graphic artist. Like something in between. Yeah. But I had trouble with this in art school. I studied illustration. But there was also the fine art department, and I felt like I was always in between those two things. It was really frustrating because I didn't know which one to pick. I felt like the work that I was doing and my interests were too like autonomous. I don't know how you call that, but
like disjointed, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, or not. Like illustration can be very literal, like make a poster or draw this I was like always interested in the research part and so I felt like I didn't really fit in illustration, and then I actually studied for a few weeks at fine art and that was not my thing as well. Like, I don't know, I have so many interests in different things that I do that I don't know.
So at you studied at Willem de Koning Academy,
right?
That's in, it's in Rotterdam, or
yeah.
And you're still living there, right?
Still living here. Yeah, I've been living here for 12 years now. So,
yeah. Are you not originally from Rotterdam? Or?
No, I'm from a small town about an hour from here. But this is Holland, okay. So everything is an hour from here. It's very small country.
Yeah. And so at Willem de Koning, they don't put illustration under fine art.
No, it's two separate things.
It's a separate?
Yeah. And I feel like, because I had some friends that studied at SVA, I feel like fine art in, you know, in the United States, for example, there's room for like realistic painting, like different kind of. I think the European fine art is very different. It's very conceptual.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the crazy performance things, and like not really my thing. And I wanted to make paintings and do drawings. But based on my own ideas and interests, but that was being seen too much as illustration by the fine art department.
And it, what's interesting also is that the Dutch have such a rich history of illustrators and, you know, very like rich history of cartoonist and indie kind of underground, like comics. I don't know. It's, I would say that probably your history has more graphic artists and illustrators than fine artists. I mean, I guess there are fine artists as well.
Yeah, there's this guy called Van Gogh, and
well, and so, did you like studying at Willem de Koning, or
it was a love and hate relationship with art school. I loved being around other illustrators and creatives. Especially interacting with people from the other departments. That was great. The downside of the school was that it was a bit of an unfortunate timing. In my second year, they switched the entire program of the school, which meant that...
How so?
Well, it's Willem de Kooning is always always changing their program, but they're really focused on technology right now. That meant that the painting classes were dropped and the graphic classes were dropped. So suddenly I found myself at an art school where the things that I originally came there for were being phased out. So that was a kind of a love and hate relationship, but I think most students experience this. But it was an experience.
I think, yeah, part of when you study, you start being disillusioned towards the end a little bit.
Yeah, I was definitely glad that it was over. But that was also because I was starting to have to do my own work. And I was really looking forward to graduating.
Being free from that.
Yeah.
And so is that where you met Just Swarte? Was he teaching at Willem? Or?
No. So in the fourth year, you could choose between an internship or study abroad. And I picked an internship because of all these classes that were being canceled. I really wanted to find a place where I could learn more of the traditional illustration that I was interested in. And it took me a while to find a place where I could do an internship. I didn't know the work of Just before.
You didn't? Okay.
No, it's like shortly before I. I grew up with underground comics. That's what made me interested in drawing. And there's this magazine called Raw, which was made in the 80s by Art Spiegelman and Françoise Mouly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
all actually looked at it. I love Art Spiegelman, but
And Françoise Mouly has been the art director for the covers of the New Yorker since the 90s. So it's like a power couple.
Okay. They're a couple. Okay.
Yeah, they're a couple. And so they had this magazine in the 80s, and it's mostly American comic artists. And there's one guy in it called Just Swarte. And like I saw that a little bit before having to pick an internship. And it's a very Dutch name.
it is, yeah.
It's very Dutch. And I was kind of interested in, like, who is this Dutch guy? And then I started Googling him and found out that I actually had a print in my room that he designed, but I never knew, like, I didn't know who made it. It was a print that I found on the street. And Googled him, and that guy has an amazing history of, I mean, he's done so much. He's also done architecture projects in Holland, and like he's really well known. So took me a couple of months, but got a place in a studio as an assistant for my internship.
So you reached out to him?
Yeah, so I made a portfolio to send to him, and you know, I drew a self-portrait on the cover. I really like made a book for him. It was specifically directed at him. I sent it over, but didn't hear anything. And called him up a couple of times. He's a very busy guy, and I think he gets a lot of requests for internships.
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
Yeah, and then on like one phone conversation, I told him like, you know, I sent you a package, and he asked me like, how does the package look like? So I described it, and he was like, okay, I'll look at it. And then I hung up the phone, and like 5 minutes later, he called me back, and he was like, I opened it. It looks amazing. I had no idea. I feel so bad, like not calling you earlier or looking at it earlier.
So he had never even looked at it because he had just a lot of packages.
It was just laying around, I guess. And
wow, yeah, that's good that you called him, that you were persistent.
Yeah, that's how most things work. You just like really have to go after it. And so he told me that he didn't really have anything for me to do for him. Like he draws everything himself. He designs everything himself.
Yeah,
he doesn't have assistants that like draw for him or color his work or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then he mentioned like, I do need somebody to scan like my old drawings.
And, okay.
So I was like, I can do that, you know, like anything.
Yeah, because I think you weren't trying to necessarily work on his drawings, but learn from him, right?
Right. And yeah,
really see how he worked.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. Yeah. And he.
So you said
me.
I can do that. Yeah.
He invited me over to, like, I still remember that day so well. I was so nervous. Like, I was an hour early, waiting outside. I was like super nervous and. Walked into the studio and he wasn't there yet, but he has one assistant who does like the computer stuff and like the emails and everything.
Yeah, and, yeah. Like an administrative kind of.
Right. And I was just waiting in the studio and he, like, his entire studio is like one big bookshelf. It's like thousands of books. And I was like looking at all these rare books that I've heard about but never saw. And then he came in and I think that bookshelf saved me because I knew a lot of the books that were on it. And we just started talking about all the different kinds of books. And I think we just like talked for 2 hours about books. And then he was like, oh yeah, when can you get started? That was the interview.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. And how would you describe him? Was he approachable? Was he, I know you were intimidated, but.
He's like the sweetest guy in the world. He has the appearance, like he looks very formal. He has this kind
That's
of,
true. Yeah, he has these glasses, these kind of like thick black frames.
Yeah.
I think it's also just intimidating because for me, if I were to meet him, I would feel like he works in such a traditional manner and there's so much more craft in it, maybe.
Yeah.
And so I would feel insecure maybe, you know.
Yeah, it's definitely, he has a kind of presence. And I mean, I've worked there for years and I see a lot of clients coming in, but he has this kind of presence that people really respect or like, I don't know, he's just one of those.
He has like a magnetic presence, yeah.
Yeah, but really like one of the sweetest people I know. Like, And that whole family, the whole Joost Zwarte family has become like a second family to me over the years. So I have a really
awesome.
Yeah, I have a really good connection with like his wife and daughters, and they're my age actually.
And, that's great.
Yeah.
And you know what's really kind of interesting about him? I've encountered him mostly through his lectures. He has some lectures that he did in France, actually. He speaks very good French.
Yeah.
And I'm French, so I watched a bunch of these, and I really liked how steeped in theory and history he basically articulated his work, and he placed it within that history. I really liked that about him.
Right.
I just think it's rare now that illustrators and graphic artists can actually place their work in, you know, the long history of all the other graphic artists that came before them. And I think it's so important. I think maybe that comes from reading a lot and thinking about your work and its place. But I guess that's also what drew me to him.
Yeah.
Besides his incredible, like he has an incredible style, I think, and just so economical in the way that he uses lines. I don't know. I like it so much in this way. I don't know.
I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. And then he actually, I think he coined, or at least the internet thinks he coined the term ligne claire, which is, that is real, right? That's him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I assume there's an essay where he coined that, or maybe a lecture. I just haven't found it.
Yeah. I don't know where it comes from, but I do know that he mentioned it somewhere. And then it got picked up.
And it just immediately got picked up. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good term because in Dutch we say klare lijn, which means the same thing. Mm-hmm. And here it's like everybody knows what you mean when you say that. So
I wonder why he coined it. Did you think he coined it in French? Because it's mostly used in its French form.
I think
even in America.
I'm not sure, but it sounds so good in Dutch that I think he might have coined it in Dutch. I don't know, like he's so connected, like he speaks French very well, and he's
I know, yes. I was like, incredibly impressed, and I assumed he was partly French, maybe, but no.
No, he's Dutch, but he lived in Brussels for a long time, so...
Mm. And did he know Hergé, or...?
Yeah.
He did?
Yeah, they met a couple of times, and he also designed part of the Hergé Museum, so...
Yeah. I used to live in Brussels when I was a teenager, and I'd actually never been to the Hergé Museum or anything, and I regret that.
Mm. I still have to go.
Yeah, I've never been. I bet it's really fun. So you worked with how many years did you work with him?
So I started my internship in 2015, beginning of 2015, and I've worked as an assistant until probably like 6 months ago. Like, we still talk once in a while. I've been meaning to visit him and work on some things, but I've been really busy myself. So technically, I still work for him, but we just call every couple of weeks to see if it works, and if he really needs something from me, like, you know, we'll talk on the phone while I'll edit something for him. But I've been so busy that I just don't have the time anymore to travel up to where he's living.
And do you think that he had a big influence on how your style and your style of illustration evolved?
I think, like, my work, I mean, it's hard to say because my work has improved so much because I'm just starting out. So, but it was already like the way that I was drawing. Like, this clear line kind of way of drawing that I've always been doing that.
You have. Okay. So, my question was going to be, before you started working with him, did you already draw like that?
I did, but I definitely picked up a lot of tips and tricks by seeing him work. My desk would be next to his, so I would just see him drawing the whole day. But what I really learned most is the way he thinks, like how you come up with ideas or stuff like that. Not really like the techniques of drawing.
Yeah. One of the things that a lot of these older comic artists and you know, people like Hergé, they do a lot of tracing.
Yeah.
Partly because they came before time where computers weren't really a thing.
Yeah.
So is that something that he does a lot of?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's actually, I did do that for a long time as well, because I saw him work with tracing paper. I did that until like a year ago. And I mean, now I'm working a lot on an iPad, but yeah, Jo still does everything with the tracing paper, and he's very old school. I mean, he's...
I mean, there's nothing wrong with that.
No, it's funny. Like, I remember, like, he had to change something about something that he was working on a layout, and he will just print it out, cut it up, and use, like, glue to change the layout. Just sitting there, like, wow, like, you know, I can do that on a computer. But Jost has his ways, and it works for him. Like, and it's also like what makes his work look like it does. You know, I wouldn't want to see him work on an iPad or something. I don't think that would look good.
Yeah, that's interesting. Do you know if he's ever tried doing, like, because I know Procreate though is closer to drawing by hand than anything else. You know.
Yeah, yeah. It's just like Jost is. He's 72 now, so he's been drawing this way for like 50 years.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
So
yeah,
for him it doesn't even make sense to like switch his technique.
Yeah. And so you said you learned a lot of things about how he thinks about getting ideas. Right. Can you elaborate on that?
It's hard to describe the things that I've learned there. It's Jost is very well up to date about what's going on in the world. Like, his knowledge goes, like, he knows about a lot of stuff, and it's, I don't know how to translate to thinking about how your drawing has to look, or is this kind of like, he has this kind of this youthful interest in everything.
Yeah, and like a curiosity, right?
And it always links back to his work. I think that's one of the secrets why his work has been like relevant for like 50 years. You know, that's quite rare for an illustrator. It keeps everything fresh. Just how he's in, like, always reading up about new things and.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Is that something you've adopted also?
Yeah,
I think tried to cultivate. Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely like it really helps you to like read a lot of things or watch a lot of things and to, you know, try to understand the world and also not to take it too serious.
Yes, because he's got a very strong sense of humor. There's a sort of,
right,
I don't know, like a, it's a light kind of whimsical humor in his work.
Yeah, it really reflects well how he sees the world. He does see people as kind of a little bit moronic or funny, or like he likes his,
but not in a way where you feel like he hates people.
No,
just
not
in a way
at all.
Where you feel like he really relishes seeing these little things about people.
Yeah, it's just like, don't take everything too serious.
Yeah,
I think that's reflected in his work.
And do you think that, I mean, do you think reading plays a big part in the way that he is able to draw on all these things?
He actually doesn't read that much. he reads a lot of newspapers, though.
Oh, yeah.
But
I know you read a lot. I mean, recently, right. I read an article. I mean, you recently had an interview with It's Nice That. And in it, you mention a few books that have really inspired you over the years. And a few of them, actually, I put on my to-buy list as I read the interview. but you mention 8-Ball by Daniel Klaus. You mention a book about H.C. Westerman. And
yeah.
You also mention Moontracks by Tiger Tateshi, which it is... I love that cover. And I wanted to ask you, you know, how do you usually pick books that you want to surround yourself with? Are you kind of, do you limit yourself, or just, you just like to surround yourself with as many
everything.
Books as possible? Yeah. So you're not selective necessarily in what you buy?
I mean, anything that interests me, I'll just go and buy it. And you know, it's like the internet is great to find all that stuff. And, you know, I buy a lot. Like, are you talking about art books or like?
Yeah, in general. Yeah. I mean, I assume you have other books, but, and sometimes the distinction between what is an art book and what is not is also interesting to think about.
Right.
I don't know that. Actually, most people would say that, you know, 8-Ball, for example, is it an art book or is it, you know, graphic novel? Or I think the distinction sometimes gets blurred.
Right.
And that's really interesting.
Yeah. Well, one way of like finding new books is, for instance, this is what one thing of the things that I liked about working with Yoast. Like, usually if I would come over to a studio, I would bring a book that I bought or found. And introduce it to Yoast, and like he'll show me the books that he bought that week, and like
he shared this kind of addiction to buying books.
Yeah, and we worked together on a comic, like an anthology, like a magazine that we do once a year, which is filled with
called?
Our. It's called Scratches, and it's filled with our favorite illustrator and cartoonist. I just love finding out like new artists, but it's getting harder and harder. I'm getting less and less impressed by new things.
Okay. Yeah.
But you know, once in a while I'll discover someone and then buy a lot of books.
Yeah. What have you bought recently that you're enjoying?
Art-wise, let's see. I have the stack of new books here. Let's see. So there's this book by, let's see, this is really great. This is not a, too bad there's no camera here.
Yeah.
There's an illustrator called Andres Magan. He's like Spanish. Mm. And I found his work on Instagram, and that's how I buy a lot of books right now. It's just finding illustrators on Instagram. And then if I like somebody's work, the first thing I'll do is like see if they have books or zines or anything.
Yeah,
like for sale. And I think it's an addiction.
yeah
It's also like the good thing about books, or why I like to buy books, is because it's just so different than the images on your screen.
It is, yeah.
And you know,
and there's like, something reassuring with surrounding yourself with these, you know, physical objects.
Yeah.
So that's one of them. Is there any other one that you have in that pile? I'm curious.
So I got a photography book called American Surfaces. It's by Stephen Shore. There's a lot of like fine art. It's not a lot of illustration, to be honest. And
yeah.
I got this book, which is really nice. It's called The Quilts of G's Bend, which is, or quilts.
Yeah.
So like very diverse.
Yeah.
This week's selection.
But you go back to photography, it looks like, and you go back to, you know, graphic novels or comic books, or is there another medium that you're particularly drawn to usually?
I tend to, like, I read a lot, like just like this morning, like I've been reading a lot of Carl Jung's books.
Interesting. Yeah.
Which I find like very inspiring, because it talks about like metaphors and dreams, and to me that's very inspiring too, working with images.
It's a a psychoanalytic kind of approach to the dreams and images.
And I find that like I'm always reading several books at the same time, and art books, and I think like they tend to like link together somehow.
Yes. Yeah,
I don't know how that works, but
I think it's the way that your brain organizes the information that you just...
Probably Carl Jung has something to say about that that I haven't read yet, but...
And I think when you read in such great quantities, something strange happens. Yeah. I think I remember that I used to be a doctorate student, and when you're a doctorate student, usually you have to read, in the humanities, you have to read, you know, several books a day, usually, you know? So, and you have to kind of read them at a really rapid pace, and you have to read a lot of different things at the same time. And so your brain kind of adapts to that, and it starts, the way that you parse information, I think, changes. And that's really interesting.
Yeah.
So and I think it's part of what you're describing is that way that you kind of like, you're taking in so much stuff and you're putting it together in these ways that are...
Right.
They're surprising.
Yeah.
So when you're, what I'm hearing from you is that you read books a little bit like you don't necessarily go into a book looking for an answer or a solution.
No. No, I'm just very curious, I think. So, I mean, I read these books because I love to learn different stuff. But then somehow it always translates into what I'm doing when it comes to illustration.
Of course, yeah.
So it's funny to see. I can look back at my illustrations and see like, oh, you were reading this, and you know, you were very very interested in this at the time you were drawing this. And then also,
well, humans are very self-referential creatures.
Right.
Every time we take in something, we, I think, maybe unconsciously put ourselves in it all the time.
Right.
And that's real about illustration and the way that people experience illustration. I mean, half of it, or more than half of it, I think, comes from the person who's viewing it.
Right.
Not necessarily the person who's drawing it.
Exactly. I agree.
And so how do you usually work? Like, I'm curious about that. Like, what's your process? You do a lot of editorial work.
Yeah.
So in an editorial, you would get an assignment. You don't have a lot of time. What do you usually do? Like,
Well, most of the times I'll get an article, and so it will start out with researching. Could be the topic, or maybe it's about a writer, or, you know, so it's like a specific mm-hmm. article. And I really love that part of like researching. And then what I'll usually do is just take some notes and write down keywords and kind of like fill your brain, like we've been talking about, like fill your brain with all this information, and then
and possibilities,
and maybe make a few sketches, and then let it go,
like thumbnail sketches.
Yeah, sometimes if like ideas come to mind, I'll do thumbnail sketches, but usually I start out actually writing everything down in words, just because it's quicker to get out. And what I'll usually do is I'll put all that information in my brain and then go do something else. Like what doesn't work for me is just to sit down and force myself to come up with ideas. That's just, that doesn't work for me.
I don't think it works for anyone, to be honest.
Probably.
Do you know anyone who works like that? I don't know.
I don't know. Like, I feel like Yost could do that.
Really?
I don't know.
I think it's a very common technique to, you know, to kind of fill your brain with information and have all these different possibilities kind of cogitating in there.
Right.
And then just leave and do something totally different.
Yeah. And then I become...
And come back.
Like, very... Like, what happens is the rest of the day, everything that I do or everything that I look at, I see, like, I try to link it to the problem I'm solving in my head mm-hmm. for the illustration.
Yeah.
So I might be like looking weird at things and like.
Yeah, yeah. And just noticing things that you know, wouldn't pay attention to usually.
Right.
Or...
Yeah. So I'll do other things, but in the back
do
of my mind,
You think conceptually about these things, or do you think more, you know, I know people, so I know myself sometimes when I'm outside, I'll notice a shape or a form that
right.
I really like.
Exactly. Yeah.
That. Do you do that too?
Yeah.
Or do you think, So you don't tend to think, you know, I know some people, they might be thinking, or at least that's what I imagine, they might be thinking more conceptually, like they're thinking, oh, this might be funny. Like this particular situation or this particular metaphor might work. But I find myself being more drawn visually to forms than I am to that. You know what I mean?
Right. I think I have both. So it's funny that you mentioned that with the shapes. I have that sometimes. I'll look at just outside to certain shapes or stuff like that. I do think about it conceptually. Like, I mean, there's many ways of going about making an illustration. Some illustrators like to illustrate like a specific part from the article. What I try to do is like get a sense of like the essence of the article. Mm. And I do try to find a metaphor for it. But that can happen also by looking at stuff.
Like, I don't think your illustrations are very literal.
No.
I think there's always... It's not like you translate literally, you know, you don't translate stuff. I think some illustrators have a more narrative kind of, you read it more like a narrative, you know?
Yeah. I think that also comes back to what I said earlier about sometimes leaning more towards the fine art side. This is also why I had trouble in the beginning getting illustrations. It's like, I try to make an image that could work on its own. And I feel like if it's too specific for the article, it only makes sense if you read the article. Like, to me, I just want to
That's very interesting, yeah.
Yeah.
Can it stand on its own as a piece of, really a piece of art?
Yeah. That's really important to me because I just see the assignment as like a beginning to, you know, I like to have some sort of... requirements to get started. Like if I have no requirements, I don't know what to draw. but yeah. like an article limitations. Or something. Yeah, exactly. Limitation. That was the word I was looking for.
No, I mean, it's requirements make sense, but it really kind of provides you with a structure and then you can start to imagine things.
Yeah, because I get this question a lot from my fine art friends that see illustration as this medium where you're working commercially and so it has very little room for your own ideas. I
disagree with that. Yeah,
I totally disagree because sometimes having like some of those limits or you know specifics help you to you know to start thinking about you know what you want to make or how you think about certain things. You know, sometimes I get an article and it's about something I've never thought about and it's a great way to get, you know, things moving.
Yeah. Do you have a specific, I can guess your answer to this question, but do you have specific topics or subjects you're drawn to?
I'm curious to what you think it is.
My guess for your answer would be that you would say that not really, that you kind of anything can interest you because we've been talking about this idea of having this, cultivating this general curiosity right. and being open.
Yeah.
And so my guess would be that you would have answered that kind of thing. But
I can say that most of the editorial jobs that I accepted, I haven't read the article.
Yeah.
I like that. I like accepting it and then reading the article and I'm already stuck with the assignment.
Mm-hmm,
so now I have to make it interesting to myself, no matter what it is. I really like that. I rarely read about, you know, the article or.
Yeah. So you take an assignment without, do you take an assignment? Are you selective about the kind of publications?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And because if you take an assignment in the New Yorker, say, I think you kind of already know, you know, that the articles are going to be, there's going to be something interesting.
It's going to be interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And what are some of your favorite publications that you've worked with?
Well, you mentioned the New Yorker. That's also, that's the publication I liked working for the most. I haven't been working for them recently because the art directors that I worked with have moved to other companies. I'm still working with them, but that's also okay. The New York Times is fun.
Yeah. Which part of the New York Times have you illustrated for? The sections, I mean.
Done something for a sketchbook, which are the little drawings, and then I've done two book reviews that were great, fun to do. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so less of the, the more news stuff, really.
Yeah. Also, the news, like at the New York Times, the news section, the deadlines are very tight.
Yes, yeah.
And that's something I'm not really into that much. I mean, I still work on tight deadlines, but it's something that I'm slowly moving away from because I work, you know, it takes a lot of time for me to make an illustration and I prefer to have a little bit more time. So with that come other types of editorials.
Yeah. Do you find yourself moving more into, say, commercial projects?
I've been trying out some different projects to see what it is that I like. So I've worked on some packaging design and recently did like designs for a new Warby Parker store. And it's
Saw that the mural.
Yeah. And it's just finding out like what other things are there out there. And
Those projects are firmly within the field of commercial illustration, if that could be called a field.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Actually, I mean, this is I'm making plans for next year. I'm thinking of going in an entirely different direction next year. So,
how so?
More of like self-initiated projects.
Mm.
So I want to work on an exhibit and a book, two things I've never done before.
That's yeah. Oh, what kind of book are you thinking?
So I'm trying to, I'm working on a plan to go to Japan next year for 3 months. Like a sort of residency. And
yeah.
But it's just in the beginning stages of making that plan. But I feel like the last 2.5 years, I've done so many editorial illustrations that there's a lot of stuff like that I want to make, like my own ideas and my own projects. And I feel like next year I just have to do that. Like,
it's you have time to take a break and do your own. So next year is going to be a year of self-reflection and kind of producing for yourself.
And new things. This summer I'll be working on an outdoor, like a sculpture for in the city. And it's, those are just things that are totally new. I have no idea how they will go. But that's, I'm really excited about that. Like just trying out all kinds of new things. But it's I've so hard to talk about things that you haven't done yet. Like it's all speculation.
But I have read that you sculpted in the past.
Yeah, I've made some, like little sculptures. But this is going to be outside. So, and
like a kind of a large kind of public art installation.
Yeah.
And so how do you usually sculpt? Do you sculpt in a particular
I mean, the only thing
material
like I've done are just like I'll cut shapes out of wood and paint them. It's not really sculpting though.
I think it's sculpting.
Yeah. I mean, I always, those are projects that I did for fun, but I, you know, for this sculpture, luckily I have a lot of friends that are very good at building things or sculpting. So I'm going to get help this summer with that. I mean, it's not a thing that I'll just do by myself.
Is it going to be made out of wood or?
It's probably going to be a lot of polyester. I mean, it's, and stone, like it's going to be a big thing. It also has to be weatherproof. And there's, there's a whole different.
There's a lot of things to think about.
How
long is it going to be outside for?
It's going to be 6 months. And then every 6 months, there's a new sculpture there. And
where is it going to be displayed?
It's going to be in Rotterdam. It's for an event that I've been doing. I've been illustrating the flyers since the beginning.
And this is Roro.
Yeah.
That thing?
Yeah. So.
How do you pronounce that? I didn't want to.
You said it perfectly.
Okay. And it's Roro Buiten. Is that?
Buiten. Yeah. Which means outside. Buiten.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. What does Roro mean?
It's two people that started it were called Rosa and Romano. They made it Roro.
I see. Okay. Great. Yeah.
The name's not great, but it's a very fun event. And
I like it. I think it sounds mysterious to me, and I like that.
Right. I've been doing the flyers since the beginning, and the 10th anniversary is coming up, and I got a little bit drunk at the last opening, and I like said like, oh, maybe I should do the next one because it's the 10th edition, and then. They said, okay, it's going to be your edition. So I can't back out anymore. but it's going to be fun. I'm planning to actually build in 3D one of the flyers that I've done for one of the first editions.
In Cinema 4D or something? Or
no, I'm going to design it in 3D, but then we're going to sculpt it. And, I mean, it's going to be big thing. I mean...
Yeah.
It's yeah.
Do you like working with your hands?
Yeah, I find that I miss that about drawing. Like once in a while, I'll do like a sculpture out of wood just to have one day where you're actually building something with your hands. Yeah. That's.
And working with wood is also just so satisfying, I think.
Right.
It's a very forgiving material in a way. It's softer. It's, I don't know.
Also the scale. I quite like it myself.
Yeah.
I mean, I have some very talented friends that are so good at building things.
Building large things, yeah.
Yeah, and I've always felt like, oh, that's not for me. Like, it's definitely out of my comfort zone. But, you know, I think it's, yeah, I'm really interested in seeing what happens when you, I mean, I've always found it fascinating when an artist goes into, just called myself an artist.
I think that artist doesn't have to mean this thing that you fear. No. You know?
But I was like, if somebody goes into another field, like for instance, Picasso did like ballet costumes, you know, I always like to see how it translates if you go into another field. So how does a sculpture look when an illustrator designs it?
Yeah, I also think that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Do you know Jeff McFartridge?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's a really good example of someone who's been, he has this very generalist approach to how he makes stuff.
Right.
I mean, he was a graphic designer at first and then an illustrator and then also a painter.
Yeah.
And he does so many things. But I think the best, you know, I don't want to say artist because now I'm like thinking about how to describe them. But the best visual creatives are the ones that really spread themselves into different things.
Yeah.
I think being so specific about what you call yourself and what you do is sometimes can also, it can be a handicap.
Right.
Almost.
I want to try out as many things as possible. Like, it's just like, I'm always interested to see like, how is this going to look? Like, what's going to happen?
Yeah.
That keeps it interesting. Like the editorial illustrations, they are still, they're still exciting and a challenge, but I kind of know how it works, you know, the process and, you know, it's good to have a change once in a while.
Yeah. And you're not turned off by the idea of doing commercial work is what I'm hearing from you.
No,
also.
Not at all. No.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's really interesting. Some illustrators are very opposed to that. They kind of identify as, you know, editorial, conceptual, and almost like they don't want to take their work, like they're taking their work down if they take a more commercial project.
Yeah. I feel like that's always more about controlling your image to the outside world, that I'm just not, you know, I mean, it, yeah, I mean, I got comments on that a lot, like doing commercial projects. Like,
you did?
Yeah, like, especially in art school, there's this sense of like, that it might be like selling out or,
yeah,
I don't know. Mm-hmm. It would be if you would do it for the money. To me, it's like, any kind of project that's new, like I did some food packaging for Ruth Health, and it's not like food packaging is not a thing that I really want to get into. But when I got the assignment, I was like, I have like, that's fun. Like, let's see how that works. Like, that's a new process.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why I would pick it. Like,
yeah. Yeah. Do you know like a Heat Off?
Yeah.
Yeah. He also, I think, is an illustrator who really has made a name for himself being kind of like, he does everything
right
in the commercial realm. And I think that's also really cool to see. He's also a very talented muralist. Did you do the mural when you did the Warby Parker job?
No, I designed it, but a team painted it. It's also because it's, you know, it's on the other side of the world. And
Yeah. Now, I was curious if you actually painted it. Yeah.
I've done some murals in the past, but it's I'm definitely not as talented as the team that did that for Warby Parker. It's amazing how they translate the drawing to the wall.
I know,
it looks the same. It's so good.
Yeah, it's very impressive. Is that, how do you usually work? Like, in what medium when you're drawing? I mean, specifically.
So a year and a half ago, I bought an iPad. This is a thing that I thought I would never do. I was very much against the digital way of working.
Yeah. How did you work before that then?
Everything by hand. I didn't use a computer like in art school. I did everything by hand.
With pencil and then
pencil,
ink?
Yeah, so the first few years I was doing everything with a brush, actually. And then then with pens and colored ink. And
what kind of colored ink did you use? I was curious. Because it looks like you're using like old school, like India ink almost.
It's called Ecoline here, but I don't know if that's a thing over
there.
Oh,
I know what you're talking about. Yeah, yeah. No, I do know what you're talking about.
It's like, it's not watercolor. It works the same way as watercolor, but the colors are much more vibrant.
And they're not, and are they even water activated?
They are, but they don't have pigment. They're like dyes. They're like,
yeah,
okay. That's why they're so vibrant. But the thing is, like, they'll fade over time by sunlight.
I think it's similar to what you're describing, similar to what, you know, Japanese artists use, like, for like animation. Like, they use like something called poster colors.
Yeah, yeah, I've seen that. Yeah, I think it's.
And I think those fades, because they're not meant to be, you know, they're meant to be almost temporary.
Right.
Yeah, so they fade a lot with time.
Which is a shame. And actually, like, we're talking about Yost before, he uses the same stuff. So, I mean, you can't hang his originals in sunlight. They'll just fade away.
There's no way to fix that, to spray something on top that can protect it?
No, it will just protect it temporarily, but...
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting, yeah. I know a lot of people who like those inks, actually, too. And I think they're not very expensive also.
They're very cheap. And you can use a bottle for 5 years. You know, it's very economical. But
it's something I want to try, actually, yeah.
Yeah. The only thing is, like, after a while, when I started doing commissions, I moved away from it because changing colors, or it's impossible, like, to do adjustments. Yeah.
I guess you could take it into a Photoshop and do it that way.
Yeah. But then that kind of defeats the purpose of using traditional media.
Well, I mean, you would still have that same kind of like the
look,
you know, the underlaying paper coming through, I think would still work.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Right.
But so now you do iPad.
Yeah, I used the iPad for sketching. You know, it's much faster. You don't have to scan and do all those things.
In Procreate?
Yeah, I do everything in Procreate. And it's also, like, I wanted to be a bit more portable. Like, I'm working by myself the whole day in my studio. And what I like about the iPad is that it, you know, I can go to my friend's studio or take a trip and have everything that I need with me. So it definitely gave me a lot of freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been using the iPad for most of my illustrations. And now I'm actually trying to learn Illustrator, which is the last program I've ever thought I would be interested in. But it comes with so many new possibilities that I like to try out.
Yeah, Illustrator is it's just so much fun.
Yeah. I think I just have a trauma of, like, when I was in art school, like, the kind of vector generic illustrations that you would see a lot. And, like, I associated that with Illustrator for a long time. But you know.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that. Yeah. I do think that it removes a certain, you can inject back some of that kind of tangible quality of the paper, but it's hard to do well.
Yeah.
When you work just in vector.
Yeah.
And I think I understand. Yeah. I understand what you mean. And now, do you actually finish illustrations in Procreate, or do you find yourself, like, do you have to put it through Photoshop or something and actually finish everything?
I color it in Photoshop and add a little bit of texture to it.
Why do you color it in Photoshop?
It's mostly because I'm just used to it, and then, like, the iPad is such a small screen. I like it to work on my iMac and use some filters in Photoshop, but I could definitely do it all on the iPad.
How do you usually color your work? Because you have such an interesting way of using color, I think.
It's a long process. It takes a long time to make things look good. Yeah, I just like keep changing colors.
Do you keep it till the end, or do you usually have an idea of the colors you're going to use?
No, the colors, they come after the illustration is approved, and I'll just draw everything in the final lines and only then start thinking about colors, which can really like make it tough, because sometimes things don't work out and you just realize it when you start coloring it. It's Yeah, but it's just...
But the other side of it is also that if it works in black and white, I think there's just... It's very likely that it'll work in color too.
Yeah, but it does take me a long time to get the colors right. And actually, I've learned a lot from art directors in the past that would help me out. Most art directors like if you use a kind of limited palette. And I would definitely throw too many colors in it at the beginning. And I've learned a lot from working with them and like removing colors or.
Yeah.
Actually, art school, I did the first 3 years, I only worked in black and white. So it took a long while before I started using color. And now it's quite an important aspect of the work.
Do you use brushes in Photoshop to color, or do you use like masks, or how do you usually do it?
I use the bucket tool.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
and then
everything
you just use a lot of like blending and filters and stuff.
Well, I work with just colored shapes, so I don't do any shading or anything. So
no,
I can just
Although on some of your posters for Roro, it looks like you did shade a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
Just, very slight, but...
Yeah, but usually it's... I'll just select areas and throw color in it and then keep adjusting the colors. I mean, colors are very tricky. You have one color and then you put another color next to it and suddenly everything changes. It's...
Yeah, and your colors still look a little bit like those inks you were talking about.
Yeah.
Even now.
Thank God for Photoshop.
and how do you do the paper? Then how do you have that paper texture? Is it just from scanning the paper?
No, I just use a noise filter on it. It's very basic. Okay. I put very little texture on it. I tried.
So you really use the kind of computer art aspect of it too.
Yeah, I mean, I tried before to really mimic the textures, but it didn't look good to me.
Yeah.
So I
think it's good to embrace the kind of, because it's sort of magic, the way that Photoshop can do stuff like that.
Yeah. There's very little filters involved. I usually just throw like a noise filter over it to have some sort of texture. But then I don't really mess around with too many layers of effects.
Yeah. Lately, I discovered an older setting in Photoshop, the pointillize setting. I don't know if you've ever used it.
I don't know how to make it work. I know that...
It's wacky, yeah. It's really intense.
Yeah, but I know that
you have
Robert
to
Beatty, I don't know.
Desaturate if you
know. It. Right.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know Robert Beatty.
I do, I love his work.
He used that filter on everything. I don't know how, but that's one of his tricks.
You have to desaturate it and then blend it with like overlay or soft light.
I tried it.
You tried that?
I might try that.
Oh, you haven't. Okay. Yeah. I think what you have to do is copy everything and kind of use the filter and then desaturate it completely and then blend it, basically.
So it's fun. Like everybody finds out their way of... I like how Photoshop, there's not a way to do things. So
No.
You can really like find your own look by experimenting with those effects.
Yeah, because all these older like pointillize and all those things, I think those are legacy kind of, you know, they're not like, I think they almost don't make sense, but it's funny that they kept them. And I think that's the charm of Photoshop and Adobe programs.
Right.
It's also a pain sometimes, but But the pointillized thing, I think it makes the noises much bigger.
Yeah.
It's not, noise is much smaller, and but pointillized, it's like a really, it's really fun because they're so much bigger. You can adjust the size of the, they call them cells, I think. Mm. So, and it's kind of fun to use, but it's definitely, I don't think it's as, it's not as subtle.
No.
Definitely.
No.
Yeah. And do you, how do you usually like, I know that your illustration, something very striking about your work is that you seem to remove all the unnecessary things, you know, in an illustration that
yeah.
I think by the end of them, they usually have this kind of very clear direction and there's not a lot of extraneous data or information right. in them.
Yeah.
Is that, why do you do that? Do you know?
I mean, I'm quite an organized person. I think if you look at my illustrations, you can guess how my house looks like. I just like to,
mm-hmm.
I don't like noise that much. And yeah. If it's, I like my illustrations to communicate clearly and directly.
Yeah.
And I don't like to have any things that distract from the illustration. And also, I draw everything.
Would you call yourself a minimalist?
I'm definitely interested in it. I mean, you can take it too far, you know. Like, I don't want it to make it my goal. But I think I draw, everything that I draw is quite flat. And mm-hmm. so maybe I look at my drawings a little bit like a graphic designer does.
I think so, yeah.
Just balancing
yeah, in a way,
things
yeah.
and spacing things out. And the way that I draw, every little thing that I add, you know, it is really like a significant thing in the composition. So. I try to remove things that are not necessary.
Yeah, I mean, I think it takes a lot of skill to actually balance those compositions in that way.
Right.
And it's something I'm drawn to a lot, I think, in the type of art and illustration that I like.
Mm.
So I always wonder, you know, because I know there's not really one magic formula for doing that. It's a lot of like trial and error, but I always kind of wonder how the people that I admire are doing it, you know?
Right.
Because it's so hard to take away information. Sometimes a busier composition, I think it almost saves you in a way.
Yeah. I mean, I remember there was a period in my life where I would cross-hatch everything and just fill up the entire mm-hmm. canvas. And I was like hiding a lot of things and
yeah.
maybe also try to impress with skill and but mm-hmm. Like the artists that I like it usually they're so good with like using minimal stuff to make their design.
Yeah,
it's just something that I'm drawn to, but and you know, that's just the way that I work, I guess. I always start up with sketching way more than I end up using in the illustration.
Yeah. Do you take it away as you go? Like, this isn't necessary to convey that idea,
yeah,
basically.
Right. Or even try to combine uh-huh. things. So the Roro flyers that I did, when mm-hmm. I started out, I would like draw everything. Like it's about an opening of an event. And I would draw like a
yeah.
character and somebody opening the festival and the sculpture. Like I try to,
That's so funny, yeah, because if you look at them now, they're just, you know, scissors and a ribbon,
yeah,
you know, kind of floating almost.
Right, and the scissor symbolizes the opening of the event, but it's also the sculpture, so I don't need to draw the sculpture.
So I always like to
figure out, like, how can you, I think that makes illustration stronger to just combine certain elements and draw them as one. I guess it's just something that I always try to
agree, and because it does unexpected things, you know.
Yeah.
It's something that you wouldn't think about
yeah.
unless, you know. Yeah,
and in this,
that's interesting. It, yeah, and
I mean, in this sense, my work, like, it resembles stylistically maybe sometimes the work of Joost, but we're total opposites. He loves to draw all that detail.
I agree. Yeah I was gonna say that. I think he's much more inclined to draw scenes, and
he's very good at it. And like, for me, I'm not that great with drawing. Like, if you start doing it that way, you have to draw everything. Like,
Yeah. I mean, and I think maybe that comes from his comic book kind of background.
Also,
too.
His like, for instance, his interest in architecture. If you look at how he draw houses, everything has to be correct. So, I mean, the window has to be able to close. And like, he thinks about it as an architect while drawing.
Yeah. He definitely has that kind of approach to it. And he designed a building in Rotterdam, right?
And he's from or Ireland. He did a big building
there.
And he loves the detail of things. I'm the total opposite. I like to really make a simplified version of every object.
Is that something he tried to dissuade you from or no?
No, not at all. No.
Hmm. Yeah. I don't know. I think it's really interesting to think about how different people approach that kind of thing, like how somebody might simplify something greatly while someone else might have a much more maximalist kind of, it's really funny, but I think I side more with you in that sense. But it also, for me, I think it's also my limitations as an artist that make me veer more towards the simplified, because in a way, even though it's hard compositionally, I also know that I'm not capable of doing what Yus is doing, you know, with people and architecture. I don't know.
I try to avoid drawing so many things. that definitely has to do.
What are some of your least favorite things to draw?
I don't like drawing. I have to watch out. I don't know if art directors are listening, but
Well, just because you don't like drawing something doesn't mean you can't do it well.
But one thing is like characters, like drawing people.
Tricky, yeah.
Tricky, but also I really like leaving them out. But it's a difficult thing to do with editorial illustrations.
I like placing their limbs, maybe a hand. Or,
yeah.
I don't know so much like drawing the whole of them.
Right. So, but there's a lot of things that, that are hard to draw. And it's also the reason why I don't really draw in 3D, for instance, or like have anything in perspective. Everything's flat. Makes it so much easier. But also, I really like drawing that way.
Yeah, I mean, but your work does have a certain volume to it. Even like you were mentioning those flyers, the sculpture has a lot of volume to it in the flyers.
Yeah, but still it's like a flat perspective.
That's
a thing that I like. I mean, as a kid, I really liked the Flemish old paintings, like from the 1500s. And it's, or maybe earlier, but it's where they haven't really figured out perspective quite yet.
Yeah.
And it's, everything's kind of off, but I really love that.
To me,
if everything like works perfectly in perspective, it becomes really boring to me because I can just that's how the world looks. So.
Yeah, I can understand that. I wonder if, we didn't really talk about your promotional, like the way you promote yourself, but I also want to keep to the time schedule for your sake. I did want to ask you though, if you have, an approach or tips for promoting yourself and establishing yourself that you could share for people that, are starting out or have those sort of questions.
Hmm. Well, Instagram has been a big thing for me.
Yeah.
It's the only social media thing that I have, and it's also the only place where I'll put my work on.
Well, you do have a website.
Yeah. Yeah, but do people really go to websites?
Actually, nowadays? I got recently a commission from someone that Googled something. So that's weird.
Wow. Okay.
I don't really understand how it happened even, but it does happen.
Right. Self-promoting.
Do you email people? Do you cold email? Do you send out your portfolio? I mean, you did that with you, so I assume you do.
Yeah, I contacted him for the internship, but I have to be honest, I've never done the cold email thing. I've never sent emails to art directors or...
Consider yourself lucky.
Yeah. it's just been like... usually the illustrations that I do, some art director see it and
on Instagram
will contact me. Yeah. that's a good thing about Instagram is that, you know, when you have art directors following you, they'll see your new work without you having to like spam them
yeah.
with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, just like I don't do the email thing, but I mean, probably at some point I will have to.
Yeah, especially if you identify the type of project you want to work on. It just could be yeah. more direct to directly contact the person that you want to work with.
It's like I've been enjoying like get, you know, people reaching out for different kinds of projects.
It's almost random, yeah.
Just trying them yeah. out. Yeah, I really like that. And then if I wouldn't know where to email, like, specifically what I would want to do. I mean, it's rare that I have like a week off, but if I do, I really love having that week off to either like learn a new program or mm-hmm. try to experiment for myself or something. Also, well, I know that I want to do an exhibit and like a book. So also for now, I know that next year I kind of want to keep free, I guess.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've been lucky that some art directors have been asking me on a regular basis.
Yeah.
If that would not have happened, I would definitely have to go after assignments more myself.
Yeah, yeah.
But I've been fortunate to have some people that really that I really have a good relationship with.
Yeah. Do you have any advice that you would give somebody starting out in the field, and whether as a graphic artist or an illustrator or a graphic designer who illustrates? I don't know.
It's hard to give a general advice, but
it is. Yeah.
I think a lot of people are held back by fear or insecurities
mm-hmm.
That their work might not be good enough or stuff like that. And I think like learning to just do it, like if I look like the last 2.5 years that I've been working as a freelancer, it's been very scary, to be honest. It's like a lot of projects where I didn't know, like, am I able to do this? Or, you know, I went from not having any assignments to working for quite big publications. It went very quickly.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've always felt like, oh, I'm not ready for this. Or I see a lot of people that I think are held back by maybe thinking that they're not ready yet. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's hard to give general advice. Yeah. Like,
and it maybe isn't so productive to do that.
No. It's, I mean, it really depends on, I mean, I've been getting a lot of emails about how to get started or...
From illustrators that admire your work?
Yeah. And it's like, just put in the time and the effort. Like,
yeah.
Maybe this is like terrible advice. Like,
I don't think it's bad advice. I think that certainly is an important...
I think it comes down to hard work. Mm-hmm. Mostly. Yeah. And I mean, you can always like improve your technique mm-hmm. but to be an illustrator, it's more than just drawing. Like it's
thinking.
It's also, you know, it's thinking, yeah. And it's also like being working under tight deadlines and you know, I know a lot of like very talented people that I graduated with, and it's not their talent that's not getting them work. It's maybe because they're, I don't know, sorry.
Okay, so I think what I heard you saying, though, is that people need to not be discouraged and kind of like, I think also what you're saying is that you learn by putting your work out, even if it's not perfect.
Yeah.
I think that's good advice, because a lot of people, they wait around to get to a stage where they're perfect. And maybe that's not the best idea, really.
Right. Yeah, I think a lot of students or beginning illustrators, they focus a lot on technique. And, you know, the ideas are very important.
Is that something you would also say, maybe, that the technique is not everything, that you have to focus a lot on the ideas?
Definitely on the ideas. And I remember one of the first days at the academy, our first illustration class, our teacher gave us a very quick assignment, and it was, he asked us to sketch out a cover for, like, an imaginary cover for a car magazine for children. And we had 5 minutes to sketch a cover, like a quick thumbnail sketch, or
yeah.
So everybody starts sketching, and after 5 minutes, everybody's done, and the teacher asks us, "How many of you have drawn a car, like, in 2/3 view, you know, from the side?" And everybody put up their hand.
That's so funny.
Yeah, and then it was like, "How many of you have changed the headlights of the car for eyes?" You know, and again, everybody puts up their hands. And it was a great lesson, and also shows that, you know, a lot of people have the same ideas. And, like, if I think it's important, if you want to work as an illustrator, it's developing that side where you develop your ideas, or how you see the world, or how you can, what's, like, how you can show something. Like,
yeah,
you have to think about,
and understanding what is a good idea and what's maybe not so good or not so interesting, you know?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people will have the same idea, but what's your relationship to all the other illustrators? I think it's an important thing to think about.
And I think that goes back to reading a lot and being open, cultivating a sense of curiosity.
That definitely helps, because, you know, you have so much more to pick from, or, you know, you can link certain ideas.
Yeah. Points of references. Also, yeah.
I mean, this is for editorial illustration. I mean, there are so many different kinds of illustration.
Yeah. But I think that it also is advice that could be applied to other types of illustration.
Right.
So let's do the rapid fire questions to close this off, because I'm actually curious about a bunch of them. But do you have some comic books or graphic novels that you find yourself recommending to people?
Well, I just talked about this on It's Nice That, but my favorite, all-time favorite, is 8-Ball.
Yeah.
It's such a great series. And
I actually haven't read that. I read some of his other graphic novels, like his, you know, standalone little novels. 8-Ball is more of it's a series, right?
It's a series, and it's when he started working. So it's his early 20s. And it's very dirty. It's like an angry teenager.
Yeah.
You know, looking at the world. And for me, it changed everything when I first saw 8-Ball. So to me, it's the reason that I started illustrating.
Wow. Just, yeah.
Like, yeah. I mean, I come from a little town in Holland. Like, we didn't have any graphic novels or whatever. I had no idea that this kind of thing existed until I got an 8-Ball in my hand.
When did you first encounter it? Were you young?
I think I was 14, something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Quite young for 8-Ball, though.
Yeah. I mean, he's so talented. And
yeah,
as some of his more mature work is the work that I'm, I guess, familiar with. But
it's wonderful to see how his work has matured with him.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, 8-Ball is really about young people and being angry and being confused. And now, I mean, he's in his 50s, and now most of his books are about sad old men, lonely men.
Yeah.
Like, kind of like,
yeah,
shows really like what is on his mind
about life and aging and regrets, almost. Yeah. It's interesting, but I think also just he has such a distinct style. A way of illustrating, and the way he uses colors is so unique to me. I don't know. Are there books that you find yourself recommending? I mean, I know we talked about a little bit about your art books, but is there some, you know, one or two books that you really hold dear to your heart? And they don't have to be art books.
Mm. Oh, there's so many.
Let's just say there is a fire, a flood. Would you take, which book would you take? Would you save?
Oh, that's a terrible idea.
Yeah. But which book would you save? Is there one that you would grab?
Well, the book that I read, there's one book that I read every summer. It's called, and it's the one that I did the Murakami cover for.
Yes. Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like the illustration that helped me get my first assignments.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
an illustration that keeps really, I mean, I don't know if you use Pinterest, but I use Pinterest to collect kind of references and stuff. And I see it all the time there. Like people are repinning it constantly.
Yeah, that was like my 15 minutes of fame. That thing. Like, it's done a lot for me.
Yeah.
I hope I'll continue to have images that also will do as well. But it's, yeah, it's been good to me, that illustration.
So the title of the book is, what is it? It's
Here to Wind Sing.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like one of my favorite books.
I'm
don't
not
know
very
why.
Familiar with his thing. Work, actually. I don't know.
Yeah, like this is his first book that he made, and it's actually not that good of a book. Like he tried to, he didn't want to have it translated for a long time because he's a bit embarrassed of the book.
Okay, I see.
Because he's trying to find out who he is as a writer, so it's kind of like a mix of different styles.
Yeah,
it's just a book that I really like.
His work is quite abstract and surreal, from what I know.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
That book is really about nothing. It's about friends hanging out. Like, I really tend to read books that are just fragments of people's lives. To me, that's always interesting.
Yeah.
More than an elaborate story with a twist and everything.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have a favorite or TV series that you really enjoyed?
This is embarrassing, but I'll tell you.
Go ahead.
I love Frasier. You know that show?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's a classic. I like that show, too. I mean, it's just, I used to watch it when I was very young, actually.
Yeah. Besides that, I don't watch that much TV. I go a lot to the cinema, but I don't watch TV that much.
So let me ask you, what movies have you seen recently that you've enjoyed?
They're doing a special here on the in the local movie theater on Jean-Pierre Melville, which is a
French...
Director who does this, like, he did this kind of film noir movies in the 60s in France. And
yeah, they're very dark. Yeah, yeah.
I love that stuff. I love a lot of old movies and film noir. And,
so you watch a lot of, yeah, that's what I was going to say, yeah. Do you have favorites from, you know, what you've seen?
I mean, actually Melville has been impressing me with the movies. There, just watched a movie called Le Samurai. Which
it's
so good.
Yeah.
It's I think every illustrator should just like look at that movie, like look at the composition and the colors.
I haven't seen that. I think I've seen it like once, and I don't remember a lot of it. So that's cool. I think I know the answer to that question, but pen and paper or iPad Pro?
Yeah,
it's something I ask people because you know what? I think. What's emerged from my conversations with illustrators is that so many of them have the exact same story that you have about the iPad Pro. So it's interesting.
It's still pen and paper. And every job that I do, it always starts with pen and paper or like a pencil and paper. Like I can't make my thumbnail sketches on an iPad. Like it always happens on paper. So,
you know, I found that it also... Like, for me, it doesn't work that well either to do the... I don't know. I go back and forth. I, like, sometimes I feel like it does and sometimes no. Mm. I don't know.
Pen and paper, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you ever find yourself making the gesture that you would in the iPad Pro? I find myself doing that. It's really weird.
Double tapping your piece of paper? Yeah. I've done that many times, yeah.
Yeah. It's, like, so strange that happens.
But that's getting worse and worse. I mean, I have a... Also, I have a Cintiq Pro and then an iMac. So I'll be like double tapping my piece of paper and then trying to pinch and zoom my iMac screen. Like everything gets mixed up.
Yeah. It's, I mean, our brains are not adapting to all these things. It's funny.
What about charging your pen? That's weird.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, I have to put my pen magnetically to something. Do you have favorite pens or pencils that you use, or do you are not a snob in that way?
I have a I used a Uniball Vision. It's called. It's a pen that I did all my illustrations before the iPad.
This is one pen.
It's like simple pen, but
yeah,
it's waterproof and because I use the inks over it. It's just a pen that I use for everything.
Yeah.
Besides that, I'm not committed specifically to any.
Do you use pencil or do you usually sketch in pen?
Pencil for sketching. Just I have one laying here. It's a Koh-i-Noor. I don't know if you have that brand over there. It's just like a 2B pencil.
No, we don't. Yeah, like never heard of it. Yeah. And do you usually use loose paper? Or I know a lot of people that can't work in notebooks.
No, I really don't like the feeling of having a sketchbook. You know, you buy a fancy sketchbook and then you feel all the pressure of that first page.
Yeah. Well, I like the way they look, but then I can't fill it.
No, I do everything on, I have this like printing paper, but it has a tint and it's a little bit translucent, so I can still lay them on top of each other.
Oh, I see what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's almost like marker paper. That's what they call it in America. I know what you're talking about. It's that kind of paper that, almost see through.
And then for thumbnail sketches, usually it's on the back of the printed out article. So,
yeah. Do you find yourself using rulers and, you know?
Yeah.
Do you do that or do you just sketch very loosely?
Well, for sketching, I don't. But before my time before the iPad, I used a lot of rulers and templates, and I like the kind of mechanical lines. So I have so many weird tools and circles and stuff like that.
Yeah, like tools for people who make like engineering, like
yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. And I just have a last one, but what projects are you most excited about that are coming for you?
So I just finished up a book cover. It was the first one I've ever done, like an actual book cover. The Murakami one was like a fictional for an exhibit.
What book?
This is a book by, it would translate to Conditions. It's by a Dutch writer, a young writer. And it's the first book cover that I've done. And it's really something I want to get into.
When are you going to see that?
I think the promotion is going to launch next month. So I hope to be able to share it then.
Okay.
But the book will be out, I think, in 6 months or something. It's going to take a while.
Did you do custom type for the cover? Or?
No, I used a font.
Okay.
Yeah, I like simple fonts. But I did the design, so the spine and the coloring and...
Yeah.
This is really something that I want to do more. I love book covers.
I really like album covers too.
There's also coming. There's also an album coming out.
Really
later this year that I did the whole design for. So also the labels and the jacket and
that's great. Yeah.
And
is that something you want to do more of? Or
yeah. I think I want to do those things because they're physical objects. And I really like that aspect of it too. Just making an object and like thinking about the design. And it's totally different than an editorial. I mean, an album cover, it's so abstract. Music is so abstract, you know?
Yeah.
You're kind of like making something that fits the general theme of the album.
Yeah, I think that's also why you're able to do that also is because your style is also what you were saying about it standing on its own.
Yeah.
You kind of need that for those assignments also.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's definitely not, they're very different rules, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, Seb, it was really great to talk to you and I really enjoyed it. I could keep talking forever, but I don't want to take too much of your time. So thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me on the show.
And here was my interview with Seb Agresti. The comprehensive show notes for this episode are up on the website at illustrationhour.com/Agresti, and they contain everything that Seb and I talked about, links to the pen he uses or the books he recommended. So if you enjoyed this as much as I did, share it with friends, colleagues, and don't forget to leave a review or rating for the show on iTunes. It really helps me out. Even if you don't listen on iTunes, iTunes is a really important search engine for podcasts. So as always, I will see you next week for another episode of the Illustration Hour. Thank you for listening.